I want to talk about your book. I want to talk about your Irish roots and all that. But the item that I think bounces off the page for most people when they look at your bio is that you are one of the framers of the United States Constitution's 25th Amendment. How did that come about? And tell us a little bit about what that process was like.
Well, thank you for the question. When I was a young, recent graduate of law school, I became interested in writing about the subject of disability of a president. I saw in some legal publication at the time that there was an issue about the Constitution being unclear about the subject of presidential inability. What does it mean? Who declares it, and how do you deal with it if there were a case of a disability? So I wrote an article on that in over two and a half years, and it was published in October of 1963. And I called attention to the fact at that point we had a very young president, but presidents were mortal, and this was a perfect time with a young president to deal with the problem, which had been around since about 1880, actually from the original Constitution, the lack of clarity. And my article was picked up a month later with the tragic death of President Kennedy, and I was invited to participate with a number of leaders of the organized bar in a conference in January of 64. And I had a chance to sit next to Senator Birch Bayh of Indiana, and who had this proposal, and he wanted the support of an input of the bar. And so for 2 days, I participated in those discussions. Little did I realize that the proposal that was formulated at that time would become the 25th Amendment to the Constitution.
Incredible.
And
that's amazing.
I was then asked to get involved in different ways. I was asked to testify on the subject, to speak to different groups, including the youth, about the problem. I was asked to by the American Bar Association to chair Young Lawyers Committee supporting the idea of such reform, which had lawyer representatives in the 50 states. And I was asked by Senator Birch Bayh and his staff, as well as Congressman Poff in the House of Representatives and others in the House, to help, made suggestions of what I thought about different ideas that were in the framing of the amendment process at that point. And I don't know that I really understood that I was part of something that would actually go in the Constitution, even though I understood that was the objective of our work. It was a little overwhelming for me at the time, and looking back, it remains so.
I bet it does. And now we're living in a country with a president who some have questioned about his ability to lead, his ability to be president. Without making this a political conversation, what would it take for those in power to remove the current president if it were determined that he was incapable of leading the country? What would that require?
Well, let me just point out that in the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, it's a rather long amendment, but it's not so difficult to understand. First, a president can declare his own disability. That's not what your question is. But if he were to declare his own disability, as presidents have done, President Bush, for example, he then, and also President Reagan, president would be able to take back his powers and duties as soon as he was able to do so. In terms of your question, the amendment provides that if hypothetically a president that was rendered unconscious or out of communication because his plane was lost somewhere, power is with the vice president and a majority of the president's cabinet to declare in such circumstances that there is a disability and that the vice president should take over and serve as acting president. So, if the president did recover from such a disability, in my hypothetical being unconscious, and the vice declared he was ready to go again, the vice president, the cabinet, would have a 4-day period to make a judgment whether or not he actually was ready to go again. And if they said he was not, now you have an issue that would have to be resolved by Congress. And the 25th Amendment provides that were there to be a disagreement between a president and a vice president and cabinet, you need both the vice president and a majority of the department heads constituting the cabinet. Congress then would have 21 days to deal with that issue. And it would require a 2/3 vote of each House of Congress to prevent the president from continuing with the discharge of his powers and duties, or that is to say, resuming his powers and duties, because in the interim period, the vice president would be serving as the acting president.
Fascinating stuff, right? We could talk for an hour about the 25th Amendment, but the real reason that we have you here this morning is to talk about your book.
As you point out, it has a very long history, including a disability of a president in 1880, Garfield, a disability of a president in the early part of the last century, Woodrow Wilson, and then Eisenhower himself had disabilities, and all of that fed into the movement to change the Constitution and the absence of the original Constitution speaking more specifically to the subject.
We're talking with John Furyk, one of the framers of the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. He's also written a memoir, That Further Shore, a memoir of Irish roots and American promise. Now, your parents were Irish immigrants, is that right?
Yes. My mother came over alone in 1928 from County Mayo in Ireland, and at a time when Al Smith, first Catholic nominee of a major party, was seeking the presidency. And my father came over alone a year later, at which point Herbert Hoover had won that election and was president, but the economy was just about to go into a deep depression. And but they found work when they got here, it was hard work. My father did all kinds of things, including at one point a sand hog going into the water tunnels in New York. My mother worked in a home, cleaning walls and taking care of a child or two. And they got married in 1935, and I had the privilege and honor and the blessing to be their first child, born in 1986. I'll turn 84 next month.
Wow. How about that? Pretty amazing. Your story is one of, like we said, rags to riches. Although you could have a lot more riches than you did. You've done very well. But you chose to go into to education, to teach law instead of practicing law. What was your decision making process there?
Yes, it was. When I left law school, I was thinking for myself that possibly I would get involved in politics, maybe local politics, and then grow in politics. Or I have done student government politics at Fordham College, and I enjoyed being a representative of my class of students. And I wasn't sure, however, exactly where my life would go at that point. I also was thinking about maybe I would teach, and I never expected to be involved in the constitutional amendment drive, even though I wrote an article urging the reform, and so life just took me in a direction where a small firm I joined became a larger firm and a successful law firm. But I always, all along the way, I was a faction lawyer for 21 years. All along the way, I served, and I always hoped that I might be able to serve full time. But my parents weren't well, and the idea of going down and serving as a member of a congressional committee, which I would have loved to have done, it wasn't practical. I needed to stay around and, you know, keep an eye and help my parents. And then all of a sudden, when I was actually age 44, President of Fordham University I came over to see me. I was a trustee of the university. I'd been active in the alumni activities of the university. And he asked me to put my name in for the deanship at a law school that I had graduated from. And I was sort of stunned by that. And I began to think seriously about it. I had been involved in the activities of Fordham and saw it as an opportunity to actually do full-time services. And that's how, and I was invited to, by the president, to help create a vision for the future of the law school. And it's been it's had a rich history of educating a lot of groups who were discriminated against about access to other law schools, and a lot of people like myself who grew up in immigrant families. And so I became the dean of the school as a result of that process, and stayed there for 20 years. So 21 years as practicing attorney, 20 years as dean of the law school. And now I'm coming up on another 20, hope I can make it, as a teacher, working with students and doing a lot of public service. I spend a lot of my time in public service even now.
Well, that's fantastic. You can read about it in That Further Shore by John Furyk, a memoir of Irish roots and American promise. Great stuff. Wish we had more time to talk this morning, John. Real pleasure getting to know you. We appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much. I've heard wonderful things about you and your program. Have a good summer.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Take care.
Right, bye now.
Bye-bye. 1380 WPHM in Port Huron. John Furyk, who's one of the framers of the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, the dean of Fordham Law School, and really interesting story about his family, his ancestry from County Mayo, Ireland, and a really interesting career as well. That Further Shore by John Furyk, FEERIC, should you be interested in looking for that. 9:54 right now.